welcome to the State of Florida Sports Podcast, presented by the USA Today Network. Here's your host, Tim Walters.
It's hard to believe, but Tom Brady turned 45 last week. He's coming off one of his most productive seasons ever, and it's hard to imagine age catching up with him this season. He's also coming into the season after retiring, unretiring, and more recently being in the news because the Miami Dolphins were disciplined for tampering with him and former Saints coach Sean Payton. Yet football, of course, is a team sport. So while Brady is getting all the attention when it comes to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, there's a lot going on with this team as it prepares to chase a second Super Bowl title in 3 years. To hear about all the latest news surrounding the team, I welcome in Luke Easterling, who covers the Buccaneers for USA Today. Luke will update us on Mike Evans, who tweaked a hamstring in practice Friday, as well as updating us on Leonard Fournette's weight, the state of the defense, and who might win the starting left guard spot. Hello again, everybody. I'm Tim Walters, and thank you once again for joining me on the State of Florida Sports Podcast, powered by the USA Today Network. This podcast utilizes our Florida Sports Network of beat writers, columnists, and some special guests to bring you up to speed on the most important sports topics. Our Florida network consists of 17 news sites that encompass the state. We encourage you to subscribe to your hometown newspaper, and of course this podcast, to help support the incredible journalism done by our talented staffs. Luke Easterling is a busy man, so I don't want to waste any of his time, so let's get to it. Luke, welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, it's glad to be back, Tim. How you doing, man?
Not too shabby. So, you know, my intro, we were talking a lot about Tom Brady, turning 45 recently, which is actually coincidentally my age, but I don't think I'm ready to keep playing on in the NFL. So what is there anything new we should know about Brady before we start talking about the rest of this team? Because is he still just ageless and amazing, or how is he doing so far in camp?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, he looks like the same guy. I think it was Peter King for NBC Sports the other day said he spoke with Clyde Christensen, or that Clyde Christensen told Jason Light, the general manager, that Brady's arm is as good, if not better, than he's ever seen it. Which, again, like you said, it just feels unfair at his age to continue to defy Father Time and to continue to play at such a high level. So everything we've seen from camp looks like the same old Brady. He's got great zip on all of his throws. He's throwing deep. He's throwing to the outside hashes and the deep outs and everything. And if anything, I think the most pleasant surprise for Bucs fans might be the fact that the defense has actually played pretty well against him. They've made some picks. They've made some, and not from any mistakes that he's made necessarily, but really the defense has been pretty opportunistic and getting some nice big plays against the starting offense. So, no, I think it's honestly the biggest issue obviously will be at center. And I know I'm sure we'll get into that with Ryan Jensen, but for Brady himself, you know, the GOAT is the GOAT. He's the same as he ever was. And I think we should expect nothing more or less than what we got from him last year.
Well, there you go. I think the CDC just needs to recommend TB12 for everybody.
Oh, I'm sure they'd love to work out an endorsement deal to that end. I'm sure they'd love it.
Well, you know, you mentioned GOAT, Leonard Fournette last week. He had a little fun with Brady by getting an actual cake that looked like a goat. Did you see that abomination of a cake? And did you hear if it tasted any good?
It was incredible. It was an incredible cake. And I don't understand how people are able to do that with food and design things like that. But I most definitely did see it. Shout out to the cake girl. And that's her business over here in the Tampa and Orlando area. Just absolute artistry to put that together. It did say happy 100th birthday on it, which I thought was pretty hilarious too. But when you're the GOAT, you get cakes like that. That's how it works.
Well, there you go. If you're listening to this and haven't seen that, you have to Google that cake. It's something to see. And, you know, speaking of Leonard Fournette, now there's one of the storylines where he came into camp at 260 pounds. Now he's a pretty big guy, but that's probably a little bit much for his normal about 228-pound playing weight. So, you know, maybe a little too much off-season cake. But, you know, the picture I saw of him with the goat cake, he actually looked really good, pretty fit. So where is his weight right now, and should physical conditioning be a concern as we get near the start of the season?
Well, and this story kind of – the life of this story was a timing situation, right? Because, you know, and I wrote about this too, when Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times, he was on his podcast and he made mention of the fact that the coaches were not happy when Leonard Fournette obviously got his 3-year contract. He had 2 1-year deals in a row, and he earned that 3-year deal that they just gave him in the offseason. But then he doesn't come to any of the offseason, the voluntary stuff, which, again, that's your prerogative. It's voluntary for a reason, and I will defend players' rights to not go there as long as possible. But then when you do that and you've gotten the new contract, you don't go to the voluntary stuff, and then you show up to the first mandatory minicamp, the first time you have to show up to work, and you show up almost 260 pounds, Rick said that the coaches were not happy with that. They were not happy with the fact that on his own time and after getting his nice contract, that kind of showed, you know, maybe a lack of commitment. That's, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but like, that's not something you want to show the coaches. And from what Rick said, the coaches weren't thrilled about that. So we wrote about that at the time when Rick said that. Now, the interesting thing is that was 6 weeks prior, that mini camp. So there had been 6 weeks since that had happened that Fournette had already started obviously getting ready for training camp and trimming down and all that stuff. And he said at the time, like, everybody's worried about my weight, I'll be fine. And that's basically what happened. He showed up to training camp and is somewhere between 235 and 240, which from what I understand is what he played at last year. I know he listed it 228 on the official roster, but he was 228 when he came out of LSU, and I don't think they've changed it since. I think he plays most of the time at 235, 240. He's big back. He's always going to be that big. I think he's back down, if not at his playing weight for the regular season, very, very close. And like you saw, you know, from some of the photos and the more recent posts, he's had a bunch of workout videos out there. The fact that that story kind of took on a life of its own was a timing thing, because even when everybody started freaking out about it, it had been 6 weeks since that had happened. And he's obviously, you know, more than in shape and going to be ready to go for the regular season. I don't think it's a worry at all.
Yeah, boy, losing, you know, close to 25, 30 pounds in a 6 week period, though, that's a lot. I mean, that's like 10 or 12% of your body weight. So, hey, good for him if he's in good shape and ready to go. And, you know, if I got a contract that big, I would probably go out and celebrate a little bit, too. So let's move on to Mike Evans, who last week came up out of Friday's practice with a sore hamstring, and head coach Todd Bowles said he's sore but he'll be okay. But hamstrings, those are a tricky thing, and if those start bothering you, especially a big guy, a fast guy like Mike Evans, you know, tell us what you know about this situation, and do you think how ready will he be to go here in a couple of weeks?
I mean, death, taxes, and Mike Evans tweaking a hamstring at some point during training camp. Because if you go back and look at every single season he's been in the NFL, this always happens. About 2 or 3 weeks in, he tweaks the hammy, it pulls up, and again, it was on a deep route in practice, the same way it happened actually during the season back in 2019. He caught a big deep touchdown against the Colts and pulled up and missed, I think, the rest of that season. But it happens every year. Every year in training camp, something happens where he tweaks his hamstring. They play it safe. They let him rest. I wouldn't plan on seeing him maybe in the preseason at all. They'll get him slowly back into practice and those sorts of things. But obviously, Mike Evans doesn't need preseason games. My point is that this happens every training camp, and Mike Evans has had 1,000 yards every year he's been in the NFL, the only player to ever do that 8 years in a row to start his career. So, I don't think it's a worry. The team will obviously play it safe here with him, and I don't think it'll be a concern at all.
Sounds like he needs to do a little more off-season stretching or something, but that's good to hear. You know, with him going to sit down here for a couple of weeks possibly, you know, the good news is you're getting receiver Chris Godwin back from his knee injury. He started practicing again. So what is his status early on? Because I know he's in a knee brace, and, you know, what is his anticipated timeline?
Well, again, you know, same thing with Evans. They're going to play it safe with these guys. There's really no reason to rush these guys back for training camp practices or preseason games. These guys are pros. They're veterans. They are going to know when to turn it on when they get on the field, when these games matter. So there's, you know, the Bucs have no reason to rush these guys back. Obviously Godwin even more so because his injury was more serious. But, you know, a couple weeks ago when they came in to start training camp and all the players took their physicals and Godwin was not placed on the PUP list, right? The physically unable to perform list. When he wasn't put on that list, which means he was medically cleared to begin practicing, that was a huge win. That told you right away, like, he's close. He's not going to be, if they're not putting him on that list now, that means they're thinking maybe by week one that he's going to be ready to go. And again, they've been playing it safe. We saw him the first few practices. He was out there, but not really doing anything. And then once he came out in full gear, we're like, okay. Now he hasn't done, from what I understand, not done any full team 11-on-11 full pad stuff. But he's been in some one-on-ones, he's been in some individual drills, and again, he's had that knee brace on. So it's a slow process because you have to build up confidence in that knee again. You have to start going through those movements at, you know, half speed, 75% before you work yourself up to full speed, because you have to slowly convince your mind, hey, when I plant on this knee, when I put my weight on this leg to drive off into the other direction, I have to be able to trust that it's not going to buckle on me. And that takes reps. You've got to do that at different speeds over and over and over again before you're going to be able to be confident enough to do that in the game. So I do not think we will see Chris Godwin at all on the field for any sort of game in the preseason range. But I think there's still a chance that week one, when the Bucs face the Cowboys, that Chris Godwin could be out there in the lineup, because they're going to play it so safely with him throughout the rest of training camp, throughout the preseason, and they're going to slowly work him back. But the fact that he was not put on that PUP list tells me that the team and that him, that they think that he's got a shot at week one, and I think he does too.
Yeah, he's such a big part of the offense, and he's so fast. So you've got to make sure he gets that speed and that explosion back. But, you know, there's no shortage of offensive weapons. And the Bucs signed two guys this past offseason who were big names, but they're also, you know, for their positions, a little bit older. So let's talk about those two. You've got Julio Jones, who is currently 33, and you also have tight end Kyle Rudolph, who will be 33 in November. So what do you see their impact being, and how important is it to get two veteran guys like that, especially given what's going on with Evans and Godwin right now?
Well, yeah, it's going to be huge because, again, Brady values experience. If you can't have continuity, which he thinks is the most important part of success in the NFL, you got to have experience. Veteran guys who have been around, who understand how to be pros and how the league works and how to work and how to prepare themselves. And obviously Kyle Rudolph, decade in the league, multi-Pro Bowler. Julio Jones, seven-time Pro Bowler, future Hall of Famer. Somebody that Bucs fans are all too aware of. But I think these guys, it's about expectations, right? What are their roles going to be? If you're expecting Kyle Rudolph to be Rob Gronkowski, you're probably going to be disappointed, because there's only ever been one Rob Gronkowski on this planet in more ways than one. But you're not going to have that same impact because he's just not the same player. Now, what he is a pretty darn good replacement, because he's big, he's athletic, he's well-rounded, he can block, he can catch. Again, he can't do all of those things to the level that Gronk can, but he's still going to give you, you know, again, not as much of a ceiling, but still a pretty high floor. I think you know what you're getting with him. He's going to be somebody that Brady can trust. And again, there was a huge drop-off, I think, nothing against Cam Brate, because I think he's a very, very reliable target. He's just a very different kind of player. He doesn't have that huge frame. He doesn't have that, you know, big physical presence in the run game. And I think Kyle Rudolph can bring that. Not to mention Cade Otton, the fourth round pick out of Washington, the rookie. He's had a really great training camp so far, and he does have that big frame and that skill set that reminded them enough of Gronkowski, I think, to make him a sensible pick there in the fourth round. And I think he's someone they think can develop into an impact player. So those guys at tight end, I think, are just going to have different roles. And then when you talk about Julio Jones, again, part of the reason everybody's excited, because it's obviously a big name, and it's Julio Jones, but you know, it's exciting because when these guys all get on the field together, assuming that once Evans and Godwin are both healthy, you have Russell Gage, who you signed in the offseason, gave $10 million a year. For the Falcons a couple years ago, Julio Jones was the number one wide receiver. Russell Gage was basically the number two or the number three. In this offense, Russell Gage and Julio Jones are going to be number three and number four in whatever order you want to put them. So I guarantee you, whatever opposing defense puts out there, whoever their number three and number four corner or safety or DB is going to be really unhappy with the fact that they have to cover Julio Jones or Russell Gage, because that's just not fair. I don't care how old Julio Jones is. He says he's 100% healthy. He's back to full speed. And again, he's not going to have to play all the snaps. Go back and look. He still averaged 14.5 yards a catch for the Titans last season and played in 10 games. If he plays in 10 games for the Bucs this year and averages almost 15 yards a catch, that's a win. He's not going to be a full-time starter. He doesn't have to be. He'll be very situational. He'll be, you know, a red zone nightmare for other teams that, again, have to contend with guys like Evans and Godwin and Rudolph and Gage and all these guys. He's going to be a very situational weapon for the Bucs. And then again, heaven forbid somebody does go down, a Godwin or Evans, something like that, you can elevate a guy to that spot who has been a number one wide receiver in this league for more than a decade. So it's just such a boost for this team. And I'm sure we'll get to the defense, but Akeem Hicks should have a similar impact on the defensive side of the ball. Again, an older guy, Stu is out, and you bring in another guy who's probably a better run defender and makes a great match with Vita Vea there in the middle to keep that run defense stout. The additions that the Bucs made in terms of veterans, I'd put Logan Ryan in there as well, the DB. I think they could be a better team this year than they were last year because of that experience that they brought in from other teams. It's going to improve their fundamentals. It's going to improve their communication, their preparation, all those veteran things that only come with more and more experience in this league. And I think that could make them a better version of what we saw last year.
Absolutely. It's going to be such a fun offense to watch. And, you know, I love the name Cade Otton. You being someone named Luke, do you think Cade Otton sounds like someone from the Star Wars universe?
Oh, I like that. Yeah, Cade Otton. That I can see him, you know, rebuilding droids on Tatooine. I could see that. That works.
There you go. Well, you know, one more thing to talk about with the offense. You mentioned the center earlier, and also, you know, they're still looking for who is going to be the left guard starter. So talk a little bit about the offensive line and how that's been going.
Yeah, very, very intriguing situation there, right? Because last year, you go back, the Bucs brought back the entire starting lineup on both sides of the ball, right? Even the specialists, 25 starters, all back from the Super Bowl team. This year, completely different situation. And really, the biggest difference will be on the offensive line. Again, this offensive line, one of the NFL's best last year, had three Pro Bowlers, and Tristan Wirfs, the right tackle, Ryan Jensen, the center, left guard, Ali Marpet. This year, they lose both of those guards. Ali Marpet surprisingly retires at 28 years old after just 7 seasons and his first Pro Bowl. Should have been a Pro Bowler long before that, but finally got the nod this year. He just decides, hey, you know, I've made a lot of money. I want to do something else with my life. I'm proud of what I've accomplished, but I have my health. I'd like to keep it that way. And he just walks happily into the sunset. And then Alex Kappa, the right guard, he goes to Cincinnati, gets paid in free agency, gets a bigger contract than the Bucks were going to be able to give him with their salary cap situation. He gets big money to go go help Joe Burrow and the Bengals out. So you got to replace both of your starting guards now. Now, the Bucks did replace one of those with a great trade. They brought in Shaq Mason for just a 5th-round pick from the New England Patriots, a guy who has protected Brady already in his career. Great, great move. Maybe the steal of the offseason for any team in terms of value and return. He takes care of that right guard spot. But the left guard spot, we knew going into training camp was going to be a huge one because you're going to have a big competition between Aaron Stinney, who's a veteran, mostly backup, who has played well as a starter. He Alex Kappa actually went down with a leg injury at the start of that playoff run, that Super Bowl run. And Aaron Stinney played all of those playoff games at right guard for the Bucs. So he's proven he can do that. So he makes the most sense this to replace Marpet at left guard, but they also traded up in the 2nd round for Luke Gedecky, who played tackle at Central Michigan, but they see him as a guard, and so he's going to compete for that spot. Nick Leverett is another guy with versatility who can actually play all 5 positions on the offensive line, so he'll compete for that role as well. But the big blow to this team came on the 2nd day of training camp when Ryan Jensen just got rolled really, really bad right through his knee. And it looked really bad. It looked like a really bad injury. We're still waiting to have any sort of prognosis from the team. It's been a couple weeks now. And I believe from what Todd Bowles has said to us that he's seeking some different opinions in order to basically, he's trying to see if he can save any part of this season. You go back to the Super Bowl run, Vita Vea broke his leg in week 5 and was surprisingly back with the team heading into the NFC title game. So I think Jensen is kind of looking at this as is there any way that because this happened so early, we've got the rest of training camp, the rest of the preseason, the rest of the season, if there's any way that I can get surgery or whatever needs to be done and maybe get back for the playoffs, get back for the Super Bowl or anything like that, I'm going to do it. So they're going to, you know, obviously have to look at that and the injured reserve situation, and he's going to do everything he can. Again, this is a guy who has played through multiple injuries over the last 4 years he spent in Tampa Bay. Very, very important to Tom Brady. He was the first person Brady called when he knew he was coming back and wanted to make sure the Bucs retained him, which they did on a big 3-year contract to keep Ryan Jensen. He's a very, very big part of this team and a part of this offense and a part of what helps Brady be successful. So if there's any chance that even late in this season, maybe even just the playoffs, that he'll be able to return, they want to leave that door open, I think. So that's why we haven't heard a hard and fast diagnosis on what's up with Jensen yet. But no matter what, Bowles said he's going to be out at least a couple months either way. We do know that much. And that means Robert Hainsey, the 3rd-round pick out of Notre Dame last year, is going to be their starting center. I know there's some veterans out there, J.C. Treader, that people have talked about. They make sense, but the team really likes Robert Hainsey. He put a lot of work in the offseason to prepare to compete for that left guard spot. Because, again, we knew Marpet wasn't going to be back pretty early on. So he's been planning to compete for that spot and then kind of thrust into this situation where, yes, he was trained at center last year. That's where they wanted him to play. But heading into this season, he was thinking maybe left guard because Marpet was gone and Jensen was going to be back. Now he's thrust into a situation where he's going to be the guy at center, I think. The team has faith in him, and I think he's going to perform better than most people think. He's obviously not going to be at Jensen's level as a Pro Bowler or maybe the best center in the league. But Hainsey could surprise some people. Again, it's going to be a less certain situation than what the Bucs had last year.
Oh, yeah. It's one of those positions that you rarely think about. But, boy, once it goes missing, you see what a big, you know, domino effect that it has. So we'll keep an eye on that one. So let's talk about some defense now. And when you look at the defensive side of the ball, it's probably going to look pretty familiar. You've got Shaq Barrett, Lavonte David, Devin White, William Golson, Jamel Dean, you know, Vita Vea, all the names you know. So when you look at the defense, what are maybe the biggest differences this year? And who are some players that might come in and make a big impact?
Okay, so I mentioned one of them earlier. Ndamukong Suh is not going to be back. They went out, they let his contract expire, and they replaced him with Akeem Hicks. Again, another guy who's in his mid-30s, who's been in the league a long time. And he's a bit more of a run stuffer than a pass rusher, but he's huge. He's bigger, heavier than Suh was. And on those early downs, you're going to have 350 pounds of Vita Vea, 350 pounds of Akeem Hicks plugging up the middle of that offensive and defensive line in those trenches. And it's going to be really hard to run on the Bucs, even harder than it's been the last few years. The Bucs have been among the best rushing defenses over the last few seasons. And I think they're going to be even better because of that addition. Nothing against Ndamukong Suh. I thought he played pretty well, but Hicks, I think, could have a bigger impact, particularly on those early downs. And then we move out to the edges. Yes, Shaq Barrett is back, but Jason Pierre-Paul is not. They let him again walk in free agency. They did not renew his contract. And part of that is because they had just spent first-round pick in 2020 on a guy, or in 2021 on Joe Tryon Soyinka out of Washington, a big, athletic, strong, versatile pass rusher that saw some looks last year. He actually had 4.5 sacks last year just as a rotational player. So a guy that would just come in on third downs and in passing situations and just, hey, go get after the quarterback. So what they've been hoping for him is that he can develop as a run defender and complete his skill set a little bit more, because he's going to replace Jason Pierre-Paul as the full-time outside linebacker on that other side opposite Shaq Barrett. And again, just a very explosive athletic guy. We know he can get to the quarterback. Whether or not he is on the field a ton is going to depend on how well he can develop as a run defender. But that's a guy that I think could be a really big splash player for the Bucs and kind of a fresh face that we may not have seen much of last year, but who will be on the field a lot more this year and can make the most of it because he's just such a great athlete and has worked really hard to kind of complete his game. You move to the second level, like you said, it's more of the same. Lavonte David and Devin White are both back. The Bucs will once again have one of the best linebacker tandems in the league. I don't think anything changes there. And the defensive backfield is going to be interesting because you have a lot of it coming back, but I think what's different about it could make or break their season, because I think it may have done that last year. And I think one of the problems when the Bucs were playing their worst on defense, it was usually because the defensive backfield was not playing well. And some of that was because they were injured. They did not have the group that they started week one against Dallas last year. That group didn't play together again until week 8 or 9, if I'm not mistaken. So various injuries. Remember, they had to go out and sign Richard Sherman, who got hurt right away because he came right off the street and was jumping right into the starting lineup after like 3 days. It was just not a good year to be a Bucs DB last year. Everybody was banged up. That group was almost never healthy altogether for any point in the season. So this year, who's back? Pretty much everybody, in that you've got your top three corners, top four corners, really, if you include Ross Cockrell, but you've got Sean Murphy Bunting, Jamel Dean, Carlton Davis are all back. Dean and Murphy Bunting are both in contract year, so you're hoping they obviously bring their A game. Carlton Davis is back on a new 3-year deal. It's paying him $15 million a year. You look to the safeties, Antoine Winfield Jr., one of the best safeties in the league already, went to the Pro Bowl last year in his second season. The other safety spot is going to be interesting because Jordan Whitehead was on the field a lot for the Bucs last year. They let him walk in free agency, didn't even offer him a contract. He was very surprised. I think his camp was very surprised that the Bucs really made no effort to bring him back. And again, most of the problems the Bucs had last year in the defensive backfield were communication and fundamental issues, missing tackles, and not communicating properly and not getting assignments properly. So the fact that they did not even offer Jordan Whitehead a contract makes me think that they felt that he was not necessary to improving those things. Not necessarily that it was his fault that those things were going wrong, but they wanted to go in a more experienced veteran direction. And that's what they did. Not only did they bring in Keanu Neal, who played linebacker last year for the Cowboys, but had played safety most of his career in Atlanta at the University of Florida. But they brought in Logan Ryan, who, again, played with Tom Brady in New England, wanted to play in Tampa Bay at some point over the last couple of years, played for the Giants instead because the money couldn't work out and the system wasn't, it just wasn't a good fit yet. But this offseason, it worked out. Logan Ryan's here. he can play all over the place. He can play corner outside. He can play slot nickel. He can play safety. And Todd Bowles' defense loves to move around versatile guys like that. He does it with Winfield a good bit. So bringing in those two veterans, again, improved communication, that experience is going to improve the fundamentals and the tackling. And Mike Edwards, who was on the field probably not as much as he should have been last year, but felt like every time he's been on the field over the last three or four seasons with the Bucs, he's always making plays. He's making interceptions. If you remember correctly, the Falcons game early last season, he had back-to-back pick sixes at the end of that game to kind of put that game away, two interceptions, return for touchdowns in a row. That guy just finds the football. He's a ball hawk, and he should be on the field as much as possible. So the fact that Jordan Whitehead is out, I'm a big fan of Jordan Whitehead. I think the Jets are going to be very happy with the player he is, and he's still only 24 years old, so he signed a two-year deal. He's going to be a free agent again at 26 in a couple years and get paid again. But for this team, where the Bucs are now, I think the veteran experience that Ryan and Neil are going to bring to that safety spot, plus the fact that Mike Edwards is hopefully going to be on the field more and get a chance to make more of those takeaways and those big plays that he did over the last couple of years, I think, again, is going to make this defensive backfield a much better unit, a much more consistent unit. And as a whole, the defense is going to benefit from that.
Yeah, and you know, it's been impressive the way they've been kind of refilling some of the pieces that have left, because when you and I were talking before the start of last season, you know, we knew some of these veterans, they were on their last contracts. Some of them were in their last years in the league. And, you know, it looked like, would Brady stick around for another year, because he knew they were going to lose a lot of veteran leadership. But they've done a really good job of plugging in pieces, haven't they?
Yeah, and that's, again, that speaks to general manager Jason Light and his kind of all-star team. Mike Greenberg, Jackie Davidson, Mike Beal, John Spytek, all of these kind of people in his front office that he thinks should all be general managers, really, and knows that he'll probably lose at least one of them next offseason, and almost did this offseason. I know Spytek interviewed for a couple of different jobs. The Vikings almost got the Steelers job, but they decided to stay in-house. So, you know, Jason Light, it's kind of like the coaches too. You expected Todd Bowles to get a bite the last couple of off seasons. He didn't. Expected Byron Leftwich to do the same. He didn't. And it was kind of surprising that they kept being able to retain all of their coaches, all of their front office people. And I think that's what has kept this team able to stay competitive, is that these people know how to manage the cap. They know how to tweak deals and be creative with the way they structure these contracts, to where they're just going to try to keep this window open as long as possible. As long as Tom Brady wants to keep playing quarterback again, he came back for this season. He was still under contract with Tampa Bay. So they did everything they could to mess around with the cap and tweak this here and there. Obviously, if you look at their college scouting and what they've done in terms of drafting and developing players over the last 4 to 5 years, so much of their early draft picks, so many of those guys have made such an impact on this team, that both in terms of their pro scouting, their college scouting, and how they're able to integrate those players into their system, into their culture, and do it in a way that is able to fit under the salary cap. It's just they're one of the best front offices in the league, and I think NFL is obviously, you know, realizing that after the Super Bowl run. But Jason Light has, you know, built a team that Tom Brady said, that's where I want to go because I can win a Super Bowl there. And obviously they were both right. But that is going to stick around beyond Brady. You know, that's going to outlive him, because so many of these players are still young. And I think they're going to be able to keep this a competitive team longer because of what was built around Brady, and not just because of his presence.
Well, we assume they'll have careers longer than Brady, but he might still be around in 10 years. You know, interesting fact here that I was doing some research, that when the season begins, he will be the 9th oldest player to ever play in the NFL. And if he plays through game 17, he will surpass 3 players along the way and become the 6th oldest player to ever play in the NFL. So that's kind of hard to wrap your head around. And, you know, I did want to ask you about Todd Bowles, because you mentioned Todd Bowles, and, you know, this is his first year as the Bucs head coach, and this is his first camp with them. So how has he been handling things? And has Bruce Arians been seen much around practice?
Oh, Bruce has been seen plenty. He really hasn't been any sort of absent. He's still on the golf cart riding around and chatting all the players up. He just doesn't have that same, you know, once the pads start popping and things start happening, he's not the same voice that he was before. But his presence is still probably just as much as it always was in terms of actual proximity to what's going on. He's still out there. He's still involved. But Todd Bowles is more than deserving of a second chance. And I think what's interesting to me is if you would have talked to Jason Light after his first or second season, you know, he made a lot of mistakes. He had a lot of free agent whiffs his first offseason with Lovie Smith as the head coach. He had a lot of whiffs in the draft. Roberto Aguayo, the kicker in the second round. You know, there were a lot of people calling for Jason Light's head. And if you talk to him now, he would tell you he deserved it. He made some mistakes. He made some moves that weren't great. And he hadn't yet learned how to delegate effectively to his staff and let people do what they do well instead of trying to micromanage everything. And I think Todd Bowles basically said the same thing about his time in New York as the head coach. He said when he got this job in Tampa Bay that one thing he learned that he's taken with him from that experience in New York was the inability to delegate. He felt like he had to be in control of everything. He had to be the one with his hand in every pie instead of allowing his coaches, his coordinators, and position coaches to do their jobs and let him focus on being the CEO, focus on the bigger picture stuff. And he thinks that was part of why he wasn't successful there. And when you finally get that second chance and that opportunity to not do the things that you wish you hadn't and that you've learned from, I think everybody's better for it. That just goes for any of us in life, right? So the fact that Jason Light modeled that in the fact that the Bucks were faithful to him, they were patient with him and said, hey, we think you can get this right. Obviously he did. I think it's going to pay off again with Todd Bowles, that they're giving him another chance to learn from what didn't work in New York. And he's obviously got a much better team than he had in New York with a much better quarterback right now. I think there's a much better chance that he's going to have success. But in terms of practice and the vibe, I wouldn't say that it's much different. You know, Todd is obviously going to have his ways of doing things that are different than Bruce, but he also coached with Bruce for a long, long time. And some of that is obviously going to stay the same because they come from that same philosophy of doing a lot of different things the same way. So I don't know how much is going to change. So far, what we've heard is Lavonte David told us he just doesn't talk as much trash as he used to in the defensive huddle because he's busy doing other things. But other than that, I think on offense, you still got Byron Leftwich, and he's still going to be pretty no risk it, no biscuit in terms of how they run that side of the ball. I think maybe you'll see an emphasis on running the ball a bit more because as a defensive coach, you typically want to try to keep your defense off the field as much as possible, and that means controlling the clock with a sound running game. But overall, I don't think there'll be a huge difference in the way this team looks on the field and the philosophy with which it plays on both sides of the ball. And I think that continuity is going to be huge for their success this year.
Any t-shirts that say that, no risk it, no biscuit. I like that, Luke.
I'm sure they do. Bruce has said it a million times. I'm sure somebody's got a shirt somewhere.
There you go. Well, you know, last week, the Miami Dolphins, they lost their 2023 first round draft pick because of tampering with both Tom Brady and former Saints coach Sean Payton. Is this anything Brady's really addressed, or has anything been said at Buccaneers camp about this?
Yeah. So Brady hasn't really engaged with that a whole lot. If I'm not mistaken, this came out, I think, the day after he had spoken to the media, and it's kind of a scheduled thing. You get certain players on certain days, and especially in the preseason training camp, you don't really talk to the quarterback as much as you do during the regular season. But, you know, this is a situation that's really – it's how you look at it depends on what perspective you're coming from, right? If you're a Dolphins fan, you're going to feel some type of way about this. If you're a Bucs fan, you're going to feel a different way about this, right? You know, the fact that your quarterback evidently in December of last season was having conversations with another team, regardless of what it's about, you know, especially since you fell short of the Super Bowl, you kind of have to wonder, hey, did this impact the fact that he was kind of, you know, maybe he wasn't singularly focused during the season. Did that play a part in us not getting back to the Super Bowl and winning the Super Bowl? You always have to ask yourself those questions. But I think the big thing to remember here is that there's a big difference between Tom Brady planning for future after football, which again, if you go back to June, these rumors were already out there in June that there was some sort of conversation between Brady and the Dolphins and Sean Payton and all this stuff. And he was asked about that and he didn't deny it. He just made it clear that he was having a lot of conversations with a lot of people about what he wanted to do after football. And so when I hear that and I look at the evidence that we have, it tells me that he was, you know, obviously he was interested in maybe owning a piece of the Dolphins after he was done playing. And the fact that there's part of this that says that the Dolphins were interested in him also playing quarterback, that's what I think gets everybody flared up, right? They're like, oh my gosh, they were gonna lure him away from the Bucks and he was gonna just hightail it to the Dolphins and turn around and play quarterback for them. That is much easier said than done. Not only would it take, I believe, a vote of 2/3 or more of the owners to approve an owner playing for their team that they own, there would be salary cap implications. And Jeff Darlington from ESPN actually had a great thread on Twitter breaking down the reasons which this would never have happened. There's, you know, the fact that if you really think that if you needed all those owners to vote to allow Tom Brady to play for the Dolphins as an owner, you think Robert Kraft's going to vote for that? You think Woody Johnson's going to vote for that? All these owners in the AFC East are going to have to play against him? Nobody, yeah, that's not going to happen. You got to think about Obviously, the salary cap implications and those sorts of things, you know, how does that impact things? How are they going to pay him if he's the part owner? So to me, what it sounds like, it makes the most sense to me. Again, the most reasonable explanation is usually the right one, is that Brady was interested in ownership after he was done playing for the Bucks. So to him, it wouldn't have looked like he's doing anything untoward. It wouldn't have been any different than him having a conversation with Fox Sports about being an announcer in the future. Wouldn't have been any different than him having conversations about his Brady brand underwear out, you know, line that's coming out or anything like that. It's him planning for the future in terms of his business and what he wants to do. The fact that the Dolphins may have wanted him to play quarterback is perfectly understandable. Why wouldn't you want him to play quarterback for you? Whether or not Brady thought that was realistic and was actually interested in that, I don't think we know that. And I don't know if we ever will. So to me, this is a matter of he was never going to play quarterback for them. He might have been interested in ownership, and that makes sense. But that doesn't bother me, again, as a longtime fan of this team, not just someone who covers it. That doesn't bother me on the same level as if he would have been absolutely gung-ho, like, hey, this is the plan, I'm going to leave and go. Not to mention, even if he wanted to do that, he was still under contract with the Bucks for this season. So they would have had to trade his rights to the Dolphins. And Bruce Arians, if you go back to the scouting combine, made it clear that they were not going to do that. He was asked flat out, would you facilitate a move for Tom Brady to another team? And he said no, and jokingly said maybe for 5 first-round picks. So if somebody wanted Brady to play quarterback for them this year, they were going to have to get the Bucks to trade him. They were not going to do that. So it was clear that it was going to be the Bucks or retirement. It looked like it was going to be retirement. Then when Brady announced he was coming back, he said he was coming back to play for the Bucks, and that was that. So there's so many hurdles to the whole he was going to own and play quarterback thing that part never seems realistic to me. But the fact that he wanted to be in ownership, that makes sense, and I really don't have a problem with that, to be honest.
All right. Well, Luke, so how do you see this team then finishing this year? Do they win the South? Do they go on to the NFC Championship? Do they make a Super Bowl?
You know, I think they've got as good a chance as anybody in the NFC. We saw some of the better players in the NFC leave the NFC. I think the AFC is going to be stacked. And it's going to be much harder to get through that conference to get there. I think, yes, the Bucs win the NFC South, even sometimes by default. I think that while the Saints will continue to give them trouble, because for whatever reason, mentally, I just don't think the Bucs can get over that hump until I see it happen in real life. Obviously, they won the only one that matters over the last couple of years in the playoffs, but they've been swept in the regular season by the Saints both years they've had Tom Brady in this. So they have to figure that out. But that happened last year. They still won the NFC South very comfortably. The Saints didn't even make the playoffs. So I think the weakness of the rest of that division, even though I think the Saints will be better and I think they will make the playoffs this year, I think that the Falcons might be the worst team in the NFL, the least talented roster, in my opinion. I think the Panthers could surprise some people, but their coaching, I think, is going to hold them back quite a bit. Not very confident in Matt Rhule, to be honest. So I think that they probably sweep the Panthers and the Falcons again. I think the rest of the schedule is going to be interesting, though, because they've got some tough ones, man. They've got Joe Burrow and the Bengals, Lamar Jackson and the Ravens later in the season. They got to go to Arizona on Christmas night and play Kyler Murray and the Arizona Cardinals. That first 4 weeks of the regular season, they are on the road against Dallas. They're on the road against the Saints. Then they come back home for their first home game in week 3, but it's against the Packers, and then they host the Chiefs the week after that. So this schedule is much, much tougher on the surface than it was last year. Obviously, that can always change, and every season is different, but it wouldn't be surprised to me if their regular season record was not as good as last year's. But again, this was a team that was 11-5 and a wild card team in 2020, and they rolled all the way to the Super Bowl. So all you have to do is get in. And I think, again, they'll win the NFC South again this year and get a home playoff game. Whether or not they get a bye is I don't know if that happens, but if Brady gets this Bucks team to the playoffs, nobody's going to want to face them. And it wouldn't be surprising at all if they go all the way again.
Nope, I wouldn't be either. And I'm really looking forward to that game against the Packers. And, you know, shout out to Aaron Rodgers, who shows up to camp looking like Cameron Poe from Con Air, the Nick Cage character. So, but, you know, that'll be a great quarterback shootout. So the last thing we're going to do here, Luke, is I've reached into state sports editor Nick Puglisi's pocket, and I've pulled out $500, and I'm going to give you 5 prop bets that you're going to put money on each of them. So I want you to tell me the over-under on some of these prop bets for the Buccaneers. Right now it says Tom Brady's passing yards are set at 4,650.5. Last year he had 5,316 in the first 17-game season. So does he have a 700-yard drop-off, or do you go with the over for 4,650.5?
No, I'll take the over. Again, I think they might run the ball a little bit more than they did last year, but it's still Byron Leftwich's offense. They still have all those weapons in the passing game. I still think they're going to air it out quite a bit, and I don't see him dropping off from last year at all.
All right, and Brady's touchdown passes this year are set at 35.5. Last year
over,
he had
over.
All right. Last year he had 43, and the year prior in 16 games he had 40, so definitely the over on that one. All right, last Brady prop bet. His interceptions are set at 12.5. He had 12 each of the past two seasons, last year and the year before. His highest total over 12.5 was in 2009 when he had 13, so you do go over and under, over or under on 12.5.
I'll take the under. I don't think he throws double-digit interceptions this year.
Wow. All right. Well, so far we're spending Nick Puglisi's money wisely. All right. Mike Evans has a prop bet of 1,050.5 yards. And as you mentioned, he has over 1,000 yards in each of his eight seasons. He was only 15 yards shy of this total last year. Given he'd need 62 yards per game to do this, do you think he stays healthy enough to get over 1,050.5 yards?
Yeah, I do. I'll take the over on that again. It'll be close because he's always around that. But, you know, I think that especially with Rob Gronkowski's absence, I think he's going to be counted on a little bit more. And especially if Chris Godwin doesn't happen to be back for week one. And the fact you're going to have those other weapons, you're going to have to guard Julio Jones and Russell Gage and all these guys. I think Mike Evans will be as open as he's ever been. And Brady will take full advantage of that.
All righty, and last one. I saw a recent line that said Shaq Barrett sacks are set at 10. Now, he had 10 last year, and he had a career-high 19.5 in 2019. So do you go over under on 10 sacks for Shaq Barrett?
I mean, I know I sound like a fanboy, but I'm going to go over because I think that this pass rush is going to be helped by an improved secondary. And I think, honestly, I think Shaq Barrett's probably mad that he only got 10 last year. Whether or not he was getting to the quarterback, if you look at his pressure rate, he was one of the best pass rushers in the league in terms of pressure consistently at the quarterback. And again, that means you're missing the quarterback by barely a split second here and there. And I think that improved secondary will keep the ball in the quarterback's hands just a little bit longer this year. And I think Shaq Barrett gets home for more than 10 sacks.
All righty. Well, in about 5.5 months, we'll see if I can remember to revisit this and see how you did on your five prop bets.
Yeah, hopefully Pugo gets a nice payoff.
There you go. All right. Well, Luke, is there anything else we want to get in front of the audience that maybe we haven't discussed today?
Yeah, just come on over to buckswire.usatoday.com and check out all the stuff we've got there. We're previewing all the preseason stuff and training camp. We're recapping it for you. We're going to have an interesting article up either today or tomorrow about kind of a dark horse option for the Bucks at quarterback and a surprise option that maybe not a lot of people have thought of yet. So be looking for that as well.
Ooh, now you've got me really interested, so we'll have to check that one out too. All right, Luke, I appreciate it. And as always, thank you for joining us, and I can't wait to talk to you during the season.
Hey, always a pleasure, Tim. Have a great day.
All right, you too. And that's going to do it for this episode of the State of Florida Sports Podcast. I'm Tim Walters, and to quote John McKay, the first head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, "Opening games make me nervous. To tell you the truth, I'd rather open with our second game." Love that quote. Thanks for listening, and join us again next time.